the podcast. My name is Thomas J. Sotvedt.
And I'm your co-host, Vicky Sotvedt.
Which makes this Scaredy Cats, the one podcast that you can't get out of your head no matter how much you scratch. So, Vicky, how's it going today?
Well, now I just feel like there might be bugs crawling in my ears, so, you know.
Well, that's oddly specific.
Well, you said scratch and you can't
get in your ears, though?
Yeah, it's a thing I have.
You have bugs in your ears?
No, I don't actually have bugs in...
You don't have ear mites?
No.
Okay, good.
I'm not a cat.
Good.
They don't, like, take me to the vet and shine a flashlight in there.
Well, we are cats. This is Scaredy Cats.
But we are people.
Yes.
Yes.
I suppose.
I don't need veterinary care, do you?
I'm glad that we got that sorted. Man, it feels like it's been a while since we've been recording like this. Gotta get my chops back.
Maybe you have ear mites.
No, making it hard to hear. My ears are free of mice and lice.
Mice?
Mites and lice.
You definitely said mice the
mice,
first time.
Mice, mites, and lice. None of those three things are in my ears.
I'm glad.
So Vicky, have you ever been to a miniature art display?
A miniature art display?
Like miniature art.
Like, do you mean very tiny paintings or like those things where it's like, here's a 1 to 5,000 replica?
Both count.
I've seen a lot of like 1 to X scale, like, battleships and planes and stuff.
Okay. But you've never been to, like, a miniature world in...
No.
Vancouver or anything like that? No. Or that's in Victoria.
It is.
Miniature world, yeah.
I've been to the Bug Zoo in Victoria. Okay.
But you haven't been to miniature... Yeah, so have I.
Yeah, you went with me.
Yes. So, miniature art began sometime in the medieval period of human history and has been chuffing along now for the last 1,000 years or so. It has gained a lot of popularity, or rather, during the Renaissance period. From really, really small paintings and portraits or smaller versions of real-life objects, buildings, or people. So such as a battleground that somebody has created that is reenacting, or you'll see those viral, you know, photos that will go around on Facebook that'll show, like, little tiny men with little tiny saws cutting up, like, a cinnamon stick as if it was a log, right?
Yeah.
Little things like that. Yeah. So that would count as miniature art.
So,
apparently it's this whole thing that has existed for a little while.
I'm really fascinated to know how this is going to tie into the film we're watching.
Right. So the film we're watching today is Hereditary, and it does tie into the film, as you will see a little bit. Hereditary was directed by Ari Aster, who also directed Midsommar a couple years later, which we will also be covering probably at some point. It is produced by Lars Knudsen, Buddy Patrick, and Kevin Scott Frakes. And, yeah, Buddy Patrick. It always blows my mind people name their kids Buddy.
I always wonder if it's actually their name, or if it's, like...
Or if their name is Bud.
The nickname.
I know a lot of old people named Bud.
But, like, are they actually, like, on their birth certificate, it's, like, Bud?
I've never asked, honestly. But anyway, it's written by Ari Aster, who also directed it, as I mentioned, so he wrote it. It stars Toni Collette as Annie, Alex Wolff as Peter, Millie Shapiro as Charlie, and Gabriel Byrne as Steve. This movie had a budget of $10 million and returned roughly $80.2 million.
Nice.
Big success there. A couple fast factoids, or rather, before we get into the factoids, I want to ask Vicky what Vicky knows about this movie. What do you know about this movie, Vicky?
There is a small girl on all of the promotional posters doing creepy small girl horror movie things.
Creepy small girl horror movie things,
yes.
Such as, can you give me a list of what these tropes are?
Like, I don't know, I feel like I've seen a not insignificant number of, like, horror movie trailers with, like, small girls.
Well, it's funny because I don't think we haven't actually covered a movie yet that has a creepy little kid in it, have we?
No, but, like, I've seen The Shining.
Yeah, but that Danny Torrance isn't a
creepy
kid.
No, the two little girls!
Oh, okay, well, yeah, the Grady kids. Yeah.
Anyways, I've seen a lot of the small children. There's usually the, like, weirdly out-of-tune, slowed-down nursery rhyme. What nursery rhyme haven't they used in a horror trailer? Anyways, I know that the little girl who's in the trailer dies horrifically very shortly into the film, which apparently no one was expecting.
Spoils, Vicky.
And shit goes south from there.
Okay.
And that's what I know about it.
All right.
You asked what I knew about it. I'm telling you what I know.
That's fair. So my fast facts about this movie are that the movie does its best to make you feel like you are looking in on figurines in a diorama. such as miniature art. They achieved this by building the house on a soundstage where they could remove walls and ceilings to film characters from further away than the room should allow.
Weird.
Yeah. So they achieved that. It is pretty neat. If you actually, when we watch it, I'm sure you'll notice it.
Is this just like a random cinematographic choice?
You'll see.
Or, okay.
You'll see. Trust me, it all ties in. The desk scene was filmed without the usage of a stunt double, and Alex Wolff actually volunteered to break his own nose for the movie,
Did he break his nose?
Ari Aster was like, that's not happening. You're not breaking your nose. And he was like, all right, fine. But he did not use a stunt double. And he did actually bleed, though, from the desk scene. However, not on his face. He actually knocked his leg, which you don't get to see. And his leg bled. A trailer for Hereditary was accidentally shown in an Australia theater for the movie Peter Rabbit. Which resulted in a lot of traumatized children and a lot of angry phone calls from parents.
That's valid.
So those are the three facts that I have for this movie. Pretty fun, pretty fast. So unless Vicky has anything else to say, that concludes our part one of this episode. So we will be right back momentarily after we watch it. To break it down for you.
And see whatever this mysterious desk scene that people are apparently bleeding for is.
Vicky will know all about that. All right, so we will be right back. So stay frosty out there. Hello, and we're back after sawing our heads off and paying homage to the great King of Hell.
One of the eight
great kings of hell. So we just watched Hereditary in its 2 hours and something glory. And now is the point of the podcast where we are going to spoil the crap out of it. We're going to be breaking it down for you guys. So if you have any want to watch it, I suggest you go do so. It is on Netflix, at least in Canada. It's a good movie. Go watch it. So Vicky, you want to take us away here?
It starts with an obit for an Ellen Tepper Lee.
And by obit, you mean obituary. I seldom hear it referred to as an obit. Just clarifying for the folks at home.
And then after that, it's a shot of an outdoor treehouse, and it's all, like, really nice and brightly lit up. And then it sets the tone of the movie as the house is a very bad place, because it goes from the bright, cheerful treehouse to this, like, really almost muddy colored inside pan of a room.
Yeah, it zooms in to a bedroom of a dollhouse, and it kind of, as it gets closer and closer and closer, it's revealed that this is a bedroom where Peter is sleeping. So it actually zooms in and transitions from being a room in a dollhouse to being the actual room. This is happening.
Yeah, and the movie plays with the room and diorama and like what's real and what's not. A lot.
Well, yeah, I don't think at any point it's trying to be like, this isn't real or happening. It's more trying to point out that all the things that were going to happen to this family were going to happen to this family. It was beyond their control because they are nothing but small people in a diorama being manipulated by this cult, which we'll all get into later. But
I just mean with the cinematography, it plays a lot with the space.
Sure, but I don't think it's trying to convince us that it's not real.
I didn't say it was. It's just the space. You know, it's moving back and forth.
Okay, yeah, it is.
And then she cuts to delivering her eulogy for the dead grandma. Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess everybody has to wake everybody up first.
Yeah. So Steve gets Peter up and 13-year-old Charlie, which is his daughter, him and Annie's daughter. And she's got some kind of deformity. Don't know what it could be.
Well, but it's not really a deformity. I think it's just makeup making her face look weird. But it's not...
I don't think the child is actually deformed, yes.
No, but it's not like she has, like, a cleft palate or her face is visibly twisted or something.
No. Something
like,
clearly is going on with her, though.
Throughout the movie, the part of the movie she's alive in, I definitely thought she was kind of coded almost as being, like, autistic.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. Anyway, so they go to this funeral for 78-year-old grandma Ellen Tepper Lee. And that is Annie's mom.
Yes. And Annie gives the weirdest eulogy I've ever heard.
It's a weird eulogy, which she begins by saying that she's happy to see a lot of strange new faces that she's never seen before at her mom's funeral, and that she knows that her mom would be happy to see all these people here, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, and then the rest of her eulogy sounds like what you tell a therapist, not a funeral audience.
Yes, talks about how her mom was a secretive woman that had secret rituals and secret friends and just very, very private kind of person.
Yeah. And it's cutting back and forth between, like, her giving the eulogy and Charlie sketching, but also everyone walking past open coffin. So it's, like, the whole funeral happening condensed, overlapping.
Yeah. Oh, and we should mention that before they go to the funeral, Steve finds Charlie sleeping in the treehouse.
Yes.
And is like, what are you doing sleeping out here? You're gonna catch pneumonia. And she's like, it's fine. But, so after after the eulogy... Charlie is eating a chocolate bar at the funeral, and she's watching these weird people that are standing and smiling at her in a creepy kind of way, and this one woman dips her finger in some, like, oil that she's carrying with her, and then rubs the oil on the inside of
Ellen's
mouth, so the corpse in the casket's mouth, and then walks away, and Charlie watches all this, nobody else sees it. And we see that Charlie likes to make clicking noises with her mouth, like that kind of noise during this time. And yeah, she's drawing strange things in her book.
Yeah, and again, this is one of the reasons that I said she seemed coded as, like, autistic, because she clearly has special interests and isn't really aware, I guess, mm-hmm. of what's mm-hmm. going on outside of those. But anyways, her dad asks if there's nuts in the chocolate bar, because mm-hmm. she's very allergic to them.
Yeah, we learn that Charlie's allergic to nuts. So they go back home, and I believe it cuts to that night, and Annie is putting Charlie to bed, and Annie tells Charlie that she was Ellen's favorite. That, like, Ellen insisted on feeding her and was always doting over her. And then Charlie wonders who's going to take care of her when mm-hmm. Annie dies, and Annie says, well, it'll be your dad or your brother, and Charlie doesn't seem too pleased with that answer, but such is life. And so
so after that, Annie goes upstairs, and there's, like, a box from Ellen, and she opens this book, which we just see part of the title, but all we can see is spiritualism.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yeah,
gets
I think
a really creepy note from her dead mother.
Yeah, and at this point it's kind of implied, I think, just by looking through everything, that Ellen was into some weird, like, New Agey kind of stuff.
Yeah. But there's a note inside the spiritualism book to the effect of, like, all these sacrifices I've made, you'll see, were totally worth it.
Yeah, we'll be rewarded handsomely, etc. And then as she's looking up from this box, she thinks she sees her mom hiding or standing in the shadows of the corner of the room, but when she turns the light on, there's nobody there.
Yeah, so it's, and the movie kind of plays it off as, like, maybe it's just grief. Mm-hmm. There's no real, like.
Have we touched on what Annie does? Because it's really important. Annie is a miniature artist, by the way, and so this is her studio that she's in, and we can see that she kind of works through stuff via her art. We see that she's got, like, she's doing a miniature diorama, I would think, of, like, her...
A hospice.
Of the hospice kind of scene where her mom was dying and has her mom in miniature mom kind of in the bed and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and then we cut to the next day, and Charlie is in class, and she's, like, playing with building a toy or something instead of writing her quiz.
Yeah, she's building, like, a weird man out of some garbage. But then in the middle of the test, a pigeon hits the window outside and dies.
Yeah.
And we see all the kids react, except for Charlie, who just seems to be side-eyeing it, but is looking kind of down.
Well, she's looking at scissors.
And then she looks at some scissors that are on the teacher's desk.
Yeah, and then we cut back to Annie, who immediately seems to have found her way onto the most conspiracy theory website about apparitions. It's, like, all the, like, dark blue background with the green text and, like, bad pictures that are really blurry, and you're like, mm-hmm. wow, you maybe need a therapist, not a conspiracy website.
And then we see Charlie is outside with the scissors, and starts cutting the head off of the pigeon that flew into the window. And once she's done cutting the head off, she tucks that away in her pocket for later, And she turns around and there's a lady standing on the other side of the fence, just staring at her. And then when Charlie looks at her, the lady waves.
Yeah.
And is doing a creepy smile again.
And seems unconcerned that this 13-year-old just cut the head off a pigeon with some scissors.
Nope, seems fine. Well, of course she's not. She doesn't give a shit.
And then we go back to the family home at night this time. And Annie is like, I'm going to a movie.
Right, well, I think before this, Steve gets a phone call. And it's, like, from the cemetery.
Right.
And he's like, yes, what? Oh, desecrated? What do you mean? Blah, blah. But then he hangs up. And so it's clear that Ellen's grave has been desecrated in some way. But he decides not to tell Annie because he doesn't want to upset her.
Yes. And then Annie lies about going to see a movie. And really, she's going to go see a grief counseling session. Like, one of the ones in, like, a church basement kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know why you would say you're going to a movie.
Because she's embarrassed about it, doesn't want... Who knows?
I don't know. I would just tell you. I'd be like...
Well, yeah, but we have
tell my mom just died.
Healthy people with healthy relationships.
Yeah.
Not everybody is a healthy person with healthy relationships. There are people that are ashamed about therapy, and they shouldn't be.
To be fair, I think I note that Annie needs therapy, like, 4 different times.
Yeah, but there's totally people that are, like, ashamed of needing to go to therapy. They shouldn't be, so...
Annie, again, has a weird speech kind of out of nowhere to everyone about, like...
Well, she's I don't know if it's a speech. She's opening up.
She's kind of just monologuing about, like, every terrible thing that's happened in her life, which
Well, no, she's trying to explain her what's wrong with her mom, and she starts... Because she's here because her mom died, and she mentions about how her mom had a really rough life and was kind of on and off again in her own life as a result. She talks about how her father was a manic depressive who starved himself to death.
No, he was psychotic.
Psychotic depressive, and he starved himself to death when she was young, and then her older brother hung himself in his room, and in his suicide note, blamed his mom for putting people inside of him. And her brother was schizophrenic.
Yeah, or at least that's what...
That's what we're led to believe, yes.
You start to notice, like, background people at this point in the movie. Like, there's a lot of scenes as Annie's, like, leaving and stuff, and throughout the rest of the movie, where it's, like, you start to just, like, notice somebody standing in the background, still, just, like, watching everything happen. Which, again, kind of plays into that, like, diorama feeling from the beginning.
Sure. And then we see Charlie in her bedroom, and she's, like, making her... little man or whatever, and we see a weird light moving around the room, and it moves towards the window, and she goes over to the window to look out, and this kind of spurs her to go outside. But I think that before that, Annie gets a call from Archer, like, what is it,
gallery
or Archer Gallery? Yeah,
it's
which
an
is...
email. She gets an email from them.
Yes.
Asking if they can see pictures of her work for the exhibit that she has in a few months.
Right, and she's got 6 months to do it. Yeah. We're told. But,
and they just want to see what's going on.
Yeah, so they're kind of waiting on her to finish her art. And then we cut back to Charlie, who's walking outside, and she looks across the field and sees this, like, fiery altar thing.
It's like a circle of fire.
Like a circle of fire, yeah. And Annie comes outside and is like, what the hell are you doing outside?
Specifically, though, Ellen is sitting in the circle of fire and turns to smile at Charlie.
Right.
Yes. And then Annie comes outside... and opens with, are you some kind of idiot?
Mm-hmm.
And then accuses Charlie of being mad at her. And it's like, wow, that's really great parenting. Mm-hmm. Like, you just called her some kind of idiot. I would also be mad at you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Annie is not the best mom in the world.
No, she isn't, but she's got a lot going on, to be fair.
She does, but...
she has a lot going on. Anyway, then we go back into the house, and Peter wants to go to a party. That is going to be held at
but
this...
But he phrases it at, like, a
it's
going to
be a school
barbecue
little get-together. And she's like, will you be drinking? And he's like, no. And she's like, great, you should take your sister. And so...
And Charlie's like, I don't want to go. And she's like, you're going. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and you get the sense that this is sort of like an assurance because she's confident Peter won't do anything stupid if he's got his sister to look after.
Yeah, and... I just felt bad for Peter. Like, he's clearly trying to be a good brother, but he's also just a dumb, like, 15-year-old whose grandma just died.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're at the party, and there's a pretty girl, and Peter wants to bang, because he's a dumb teenager.
Yeah, so he's like, hey, I've got some pretty dope weed.
Yes. And then we see in the kitchen someone is cutting nuts.
Yeah.
The girl that Peter wants to bang is like, ooh, weed sounds pretty great. And Peter's like, okay, Charlie, you just need to, like, hang out. And she's like, but I don't know anyone. He's like, but there's cake. Go get cake. And so Charlie eventually is like, fine.
Yeah, go stand in line and get a cake. And then we see Peter kind of smoking up and Charlie eating the cake and starting to turn kind of red and start coughing. And at this point, we recall that she's allergic to nuts and they were cutting nuts in the kitchen. Yes. So we're like, oh, shit. She goes over, gets herself a cup of water and then goes finds Peter mid-bong rip.
But Peter, to his credit, immediately recognized shit's fucking wrong.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, hey, are you okay? And she's like, I can't breathe. And he's like, shit. And loads her into the car.
Yeah, he, like, picks her up and, like, runs out of the house.
Yeah.
And, again, he's a dumb teenager and he should have just called an ambulance. But
he's also
trying really hard to take care of his little sister.
And he's high as hell.
Yeah, and he's trying to take care of her, you know?
So he carries her to the car and they start ripping off towards the hospital as fast as they can with Charlie kind of flailing around in the back seat, gasping and wheezing for air, saying that she can't breathe. And she slowly rolls down the window in the back seat as Peter's just like, just hang on, we're almost there, we're getting there, panicking.
Yes. And then he swerves to avoid a dead deer.
Oh, and we should say that on their way to the party, they pass by this pole, and the camera zooms in on the pole, and there is a symbol cut into a telephone pole.
And it's the same symbol that is on the necklace that Ellen was wearing at the funeral.
Yeah, and so Charlie sticks her head out of the window to get air as they're driving. Peter swerves to avoid this deer, and Charlie ends up getting hit by the pole in her head and just takes her head right off.
Yes, and then...
big crunch sound. Big juicy crunch.
And you don't really see because it focuses on Peter.
Who is having the worst night of his life now.
Yeah, you could just as easily title this movie... Peter's very bad, no good series of events.
Yeah.
And, like, he looks up at the mirror and then, like, glances away before you see anything. And then it cuts to him, like, lying in bed the next morning and Annie in the distance being like, I'm going out. And you hear her go outside and find the body.
Yeah, well, yeah, because, yeah.
But you just see, like, Peter's blank face the whole time.
Yeah, well, he's clearly not slept the entire night. And so Annie goes outside and then we just hear screaming and then that screaming transitions to Charlie's funeral.
Well, no, it transitions to Charlie's head covered in ants on the road. Oh, and right, I did not like that.
Right. Charlie's ant head. Yeah, we get to see that overnight Charlie's head has been left out and has started to decompose.
Yes. And then Annie has her, like, breakdown, and then we go to the funeral, and...
I mean, we say breakdown, but we're seriously underselling it.
Yeah, she's, like, screaming and wailing on the bedroom floor about how she wants to die.
Toni Collette definitely deserves all the praise she gets for her portrayal of Annie. Like, she fucking kills it.
Yeah, and,
they all do, really.
After the funeral...
Yeah.
It cuts to Annie sleeping in the treehouse.
Yeah,
where Charlie used to sleep.
Yeah, so she started sleeping up there. Yeah. And we see Peter at school
Before Peter... Sorry, I just wanted to point out one thing that I noticed at this point. The heater is on in the treehouse because it's outside.
Yeah.
And so everything is red. And there's actually very few naturally colored scenes in this movie, and there's none around the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's... everything is either muddy or blue light or dim light. Like, there's no natural lighting in the house. There is it in scenes that are, like, in school or mm-hmm. off the property,
mm-hmm.
but never anywhere on the property is the light natural.
Sure.
Sorry, I just thought that was a cool little touch in the filmmaking.
Sure.
Go on.
But we see, then a couple days after the funeral, we see Peter at school, and he's hanging out with his buds at lunch, and they're smoking marijuana, and he starts to have a panic attack. As if he was
having
an allergic reaction. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Annie does not seem to be handling her grief.
Well, no
super
shit.
Well.
No shit.
And I
she
feel
lost
like
a daughter.
I feel like Steve would also like some. Steve just wants his family to talk to him,
mm-hmm.
and no one wants to talk mm-hmm. to Steve.
Mm-hmm. But Annie eventually decides to drive back to the grief support meeting. But she decides not to go in, and that's when she gets a knock on her window, and it's a lady there that she recognizes from the meeting named Joan.
Well, no, Joan recognizes her.
I recognized you from
a few months ago.
And Joan mentions to her that she recently lost her son and her grandson in a horrible accident, and...
they drowned.
Yeah, they drowned, and she should just come in and blah, 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 but Annie ends up leaving anyway.
Yeah, and but Joan gives her her number, mm-hmm. and so Annie clearly at some point has called this number, because then she is the next day going to Joan's apartment mm-hmm. for coffee. And as she walks in, she observes that the doormat looks familiar, because her mum used to do the same sort of embroidery.
Mm-hmm.
At which point I said, oh, Joan's totally a part of whatever cult is gonna go down here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then they're talking.
Like, but before that, actually, we get Peter asleep in his bed, and he's awoken by a clicking sound, like the same kind of sound that Charlie used to make. And he's looking around his room, and he looks, and he thinks he sees his sister kind of crouched in a corner, but it turns out to just be a hoodie that's fallen over.
On a chair.
Yeah. And then we go to Joan's apartment.
Yes, and so Annie is telling her, like, it's terrible, blah, blah, blah. And then she starts talking about how she used to sleepwalk, and how one time she woke up, and she...
Yeah, well, she doesn't just start talking about that. Joan asks her what her relationship is like with her son, Peter, and Annie kind of goes, well, it's not the greatest, and she explains that it's ever since this incident when she used to sleepwalk, when Peter and Charlie shared a room. Annie woke up one day covered in paint thinner from head to toe, and Charlie and Peter were covered from head to toe in paint thinner as well. She had a box of matches in her hands, and the striking of the match is what woke her up. And woke Peter up as well, and he woke up screaming and yelling, and she was screaming and yelling, and just as confused as he was, but she insists that she would never, ever, ever do something so horrible as to burn her and her children to death.
Yes, and that it's unfair that he won't forgive her, but, like, if you were a small child, that would be extremely traumatic to find your mom mm-hmm. trying to set you on fire, whether or not she was conscious of mm-hmm. it.
But she explains that, like, since then, her relationship with her kids kind of hasn't been the best.
Yes.
Since that night.
And then... after all this, we go back to the main house.
Yeah, and Steve finds Annie making a diorama of the car accident.
Yeah, and Charlie's head full on the road with, like, meticulously painted blood deal and, like, the headless yeah. body hanging out of the car.
That's like, kind of what I meant with it's, like, clear that Annie might use her art to work through shit
yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah, and Steve is like, what the fuck, Annie? And she's like, it's a neutral view.
Well, he's more like, I hope that Peter doesn't see this.
Yeah.
Because Peter's clearly having a bad time.
And I think Steve makes a valid point about, like, making a diorama of your daughter's decapitation.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, mm-hmm. again, maybe you just need to go see a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, Steve has made dinner and came to get Annie, which is why he's up there seeing this diorama in the first place.
And they all sit down to a very awkward family dinner where it's kind of quiet. But then Peter starts shouting, or starts asking Annie to express herself.
Because Annie is clearly upset.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he, like, raises his voice a little, and Annie just loses it. She just, like, jumps out of her chair and is, like, screaming at him and mm-hmm. swearing. And again, she just really needs to go to therapy.
Mm-hmm. But she tells Peter that, like, Charlie died because of him. And she wishes she could take that guilt away from him and set him free and make him feel better, but she can't. And she just wishes that somebody in this family would take responsibility for what they did for once in their lives. And
right, and how could he just, like, leave her in the car and, mm-hmm. you know, this is entirely his fault. And finally she sits down and he's like, well, why was Charlie at that party,
yeah,
Mom?
Yeah, yeah, he's like, you made Charlie go to that party with me.
Yeah, and Steve is just like, okay, no, we're done.
Yeah.
We're not having this yeah. anymore.
Steve shuts that down. The next day, Annie goes to a art supply store to buy more stuff for her dioramas, and she runs into Joan in the parking lot, who tells her about a open seance. Oh, actually, before this, we get a shot of the family's letterbox, the mail slot, and we see flyers being shoved through, and then a flyer for an open seance gets slid on top.
Yes.
And I think that gets ignored. And then the next day, she's at the art supply store, and she meets Joan in the parking lot, and Joan tells her that she went and she saw this medium. She knows it's crazy, and she knows that Annie's not going to believe her, but she made contact with her son and her grandson.
Yes. And she convinces Annie to come over to her house, and I guess Joan is suddenly just, like, a professional medium, because she's like, oh, just let me show you, and, like... the cup that they're using starts moving, and, like, writing starts showing up on the chalkboard. Mm-hmm. And Annie is like, I need to leave right now, immediately.
Yeah, yeah. While Joan is talking to her grandson, and her grandson's doing all this. So Annie starts to leave, and Joan catches her as she's leaving and is like, here's a candle, and here's the instructions on how to do it. You just need to find something that is going to be linked with the person who died. That's all you need for this.
Yes. And Annie's like, what is this language even on this pamphlet? And Joan's like, I don't know. Just make sure you read it very carefully. Who's to say?
Yeah. Definitely not demons.
And then as Annie is leaving, there's a cool shot where it's still on Annie, but you can just see Joan's reflection in a mirror. As Joan says, you didn't kill her. Mm-hmm. Like, meaning
she's
Charlie,
still
obviously.
Here, is what she says.
Yeah, so,
then we see later that night, Annie wakes up in the middle of the night to find some ants on her pillow. And ants on the blanket. And she looks and she sees there's just tons of ants coming through the window.
There's so many ants.
She gets up and she goes into Peter's room to check on him and find that he is just covered in ants all over his face.
There's ants coming out of his mouth.
Coming out of his mouth. Doesn't look great. But then he sits up and is like, Mom? And she kind of snaps out of it. And you see he's not covered in ants. She's clearly been sleepwalking again.
Right, and then for some reason is like, oh, actually, just before I say that, I do want to point out my note for the ants, because as the ants was happening everywhere, my note was, why are there so many bugs in horror movies? I hate bugs. That's probably why they're in horror movies. But still, just ants up all in that fucking place.
Yep. But Peter asks, when he sits up in bed and when Annie's sitting there, he says, why are you scared of me?
To which Annie continues her A-plus parenting and says, I never wanted to be your mother. And then starts to explaining how she tried to miscarry him.
Yeah, and she tried to do everything that she could. Well, but she also says that she was forced to have Peter.
Yeah, her mom wanted her to
have
Peter.
Her mom forced her to have Peter. And so that's what ended up causing her to move away from her mom in the first place, was she was forced to have Peter and then moved away.
Right.
Which means that the grandma, her mom, never really got her hands on Peter for any reason.
Right. But also, you probably shouldn't start a conversation with your son about how you never wanted him and you tried to miscarry him.
No.
That's not a great move.
But we find that she doesn't actually have this conversation with him. It's all a dream.
Yes, because they're suddenly both covered in paint thinner as they're screaming at each other, and then they're on fire, and then she wakes up. Mm-hmm. So we don't know how much of that conversation happened, if any of it, or if the ants...
I say none of it.
It's like a sleepwalking in a sleepwalking situation.
Yeah.
Don't really know. Anyways, they have sort of a reverse of the beginning of the movie, where Steve is going around waking everyone up for the funeral, and it's Annie kind of frantically waking up Steve and Peter and bringing them downstairs.
Yeah, she's got to show them something, and it's revealed that she tried the seance while they were sleeping, and she spoke the words, so we actually never get to know what the words are. And she wants them to help her try and summon Charlie's spirit.
Yes.
So she gathers them around a table after, like, a lot of convincing, and Steve just not being into it. And they put their hands on it, and the glass moves, and then nothing happens in the sketchbook at this point, but,
No, she wants something to happen, but then Steve is like, hey, we're not doing this anymore.
Right.
And Peter is clearly starting to panic.
Yeah, he's not on board. But he's also saying about how he feels how the air is flexing, and, like, stuff is happening,
and then...
We don't see any of this, though.
Annie seems to be possessed...
Yeah, she jerks her head up, and she starts talking in Charlie's voice.
Yes, and asking where Mommy is.
Where's Mommy?
And Peter is, like, screaming and begging for this to stop. Mm-hmm. And then Steve douses her in water, and she's like, what the fuck? And meanwhile, Peter just, like, starts sobbing into Steve's shoulder.
Yeah.
And Peter's no good day continues to get worse. Everything about Peter's day just gets worse.
Well, it's more like a couple of months, but...
It just gets worse.
He goes back to... We see him in school, I think. This is the next scene.
Yes.
And he notices the exact same kind of strange light that Charlie previously saw in her bedroom, going down the hallway.
Yes. And then he sees his reflection smiling at him in a trophy case.
Yeah, well, this is later when he's in class, where he starts to hear Charlie's clicking all around his head. And then he turns and he looks and he can see... Or no, that's maybe later. No, it is clicking.
He turns to see...
in this movie.
Yeah, there is. He turns to see his reflection smiling at him, yeah, which is never a good
and
sign.
And he's not smiling.
No, he's freaking out, yeah, as you would.
And so he phones his dad and tells him that he...
Well, first he, like, jerks out of his seat, and the teacher's like, Peter? He's like, I just need to go to the bathroom.
Just gotta go to the washroom. Yeah, and so, yeah. So he calls Steve, and Steve calls Annie and tells her that he got a call from Peter, and Peter's in hysterics and thinks that there's a vengeful spirit following him around.
Yeah. Which, to be fair, he sort of was the reason his little sister was decapitated, mm-hmm, and then saw, mm-hmm, a bunch of shit break, mm-hmm, randomly, so, in his house.
So Annie gets kind of berated by Steve over the phone. And then the phone rings again and she ignores it, and it's the gallery calling, giving their condolences about Charlie's passing and how they're willing to postpone the submission that she needs to make, and however they can help her, whatever. And in a fit of kind of anger, she ends up breaking her diorama.
All of them.
And then, well, she breaks the chair first in a fit of anger, and then she, like, realizes what she's done and just freaks out and starts smashing her dioramas. Yeah.
Yes. Things continue to spiral.
Yeah, we see Charlie's sketchbook on the bed, starting to draw and flip, and it's just a bunch of different pictures of Peter
with X's
over his eyes, and he's crying and looks very distressed in all the pictures.
Yeah, it's not great. Mm-hmm. There's nothing about it that's great.
We see Peter sleeping, and he wakes up to see Charlie hovering in the corner of his room. And when he calls out to her, her head falls off, but then it's revealed that the head is actually a ball that rolls to the middle of the room. Yeah, and then he lies back down, and suddenly these two hands jump out from his headboard and start grabbing his head and pulling at him, and he starts screaming and shouting. And then he gets woken up by Annie, who's shouting at him, and Annie is in the room.
Well, Annie isn't really shouting, she's more like, Peter?
Yeah, like, Peter, what's going on? And he says, I saw Charlie's head fell off, and then you tried to pull my head off.
She's like, no, I just got here. You were screaming.
And he's like, no, you were sleepwalking in and you tried to pull my head off.
She's like, no, I really was not.
Yeah.
But she decides enough is enough, and she tries to burn Charlie's sketchbook. Mm.
But she advises Peter first to not to tell Steve what happened.
Yeah.
She's like, don't tell your dad. She's going to fix it now. She knows what's wrong, but she's going to go fix it. And so she heads downstairs with Charlie's notebook, and he's like, okay, I'm going to burn this, because that's the conduit that's allowing Charlie to be here. And as soon as she throws it into the fire, her arm catches on fire.
Yes.
And so she is forced to pull the sketchbook out and stomp it out to put herself out.
Yeah, and I thought she seemed strangely unconcerned about her arm being on fire. Mm-hmm. More like, oh, guess we can't burn the book, as opposed to like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm.
So then Annie goes back to Joan's house for help, because she's like, I don't know what to do.
Yes.
And she goes to her door and is pounding on it, and we zoom out on the other side of the door, and we see the Joan's apartment's totally been overhauled, and there's little shrines everywhere, and there's candles everywhere, and in this kind of triangle-shaped pentagram on the table is a photograph of Peter with his eyes gouged out.
Yes, so Joan was totally in the cult.
Totally in the cult. But Annie realizes this when she looks down again at the welcome mat.
Yes.
And she heads home and opens up another box of her mom's old things and pulls out more welcoming mats that her mom has made.
Yes, and then she pulls out a photo album, mm-hmm, where there are photos of Joan and her mom at, like, the same events. Mm-hmm. So, clearly this was not just coincidental.
No, and she opens up a book that talks about a demon lord of hell named Paimon. Specifically mentions that Paimon can be summoned, and whoever summons him will get tons of riches, and that Paimon is a male, and
so he prefers a male host.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this leads her kind of up to the room, and I think all throughout this time they're talking about how there's a disgusting smell in the house. But Annie,
well, Steve just like mentions it offhandedly.
Yeah, he's like something smells gross.
Yeah.
But Annie heads up to the attic, and there's flies everywhere. To find her mother's headless corpse in the middle of the corner, or in the corner of the attic.
Yes, and
with the symbol of the cult painted in blood above it.
And it's cutting between that and Peter at school again, mm-hmm, where like he starts almost like having a seizure, mm-hmm, and everyone is like freaking out.
Like his hand shoots straight up, all messed up,
and his face is super gnarled.
Yeah,
and then he slams his face into the desk.
Oh, no, before that, way before that, he's out in the, in lunch, he's eating lunch outside, and we see Joan, the lady, across the street from the schoolyard, shouting at Peter, saying, I expel you, Peter, get out, and shouting like magic phrases and stuff at him. And he's like, what the crap? And then he's in class and he starts seizuring out and slams his face on the desk.
And then he starts breaking his nose.
And then he starts screaming.
And everyone is just like, what the fuck? Except one dude in the corner who is filming this on his phone. Which, to be fair, if that happened in a high school, somebody would pull out their phone.
Yeah. But this is one of those great scenes where I think it pulls back and it looks like the classroom's a diorama.
Yes.
But anyway, so then the school calls Steve and is like, hey, come get your boy. He just tried to kill himself on his desk. And he brings Peter home to find Annie there freaking out with the photo album. And she tells him that there is... a body in the attic. She thinks it's her mom, and there's a weird cult that her mom was a part of, and Joan was a part of it, and she knew what she was doing when she got Annie to do this ritual, and something bad is happening, and she's the only one that can stop it.
Yes, and so...
So after they put Peter to bed, she convinces Steve to go up to the attic to verify her claims that there's a corpse, and while he's doing that, she heads downstairs and starts to get a fire ready, because now she's planning on destroying the sketchbook, even though she thinks it's going to kill her.
Yes.
To do so.
And then Steve is like, you killed, or you desecrated the grave,
yeah,
didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, he goes upstairs and he's like, oh, Jesus Christ. And then he comes downstairs and he starts blaming Annie for it. He says, all those times you said you were going out to the movies, like, you were just being crazy and you dug up your mom.
Which, to be fair, like, she was obviously lying about going to the movies.
Sure.
And it's, based on what's happened, it's not a super whacked out assessment. Because she, the night before, was talking about, like, gotta summon their kids.
Anyways,
and
Annie's like, baby, please, just listen to me. I need to destroy this notebook. But when we destroy it, I'm gonna fucking die. I'm gonna burst into flames. I'm gonna die. So I love you. I love Peter. I've always loved you. Do the thing. And Steve's like, nah, I don't think I will.
Well, Steve specifically is like, you're sick.
Yeah.
I'm not going to help you have this delusion anymore.
Yeah. He's not like, hell no. No, it's like,
no, he's like, sick. You need to see somebody. This is grief. And so Annie, like, screams and grabs the book and throws it in the fire herself.
And Steve immediately bursts into flames. And, like, full spontaneous combustion bursts into flames. And Annie is staring at him, horrified, but then her expression kind of dulls as the light, again, kind of permeates the room, the weird light we've been seeing, and she starts smiling instead.
And then Peter's bedtime gets exponentially worse, because he wakes up in bed from his broken nose.
Yeah, he wakes up and it's nighttime now, but I think first we get a shot of the entire property, and it is surrounded by people.
Naked people.
Naked people, all standing and staring inwards at the property, yeah.
Yes.
And then we zoom in, and Peter wakes up in bed. It's nighttime now. And as he gets up and swings his feet over the side of the bed, we see his mom, Annie, up in the corner of the room, floating in the corner of the room, Spider-Man style, in the dark, staring at him.
Yes. And so Peter goes downstairs.
Well, actually, he turns to look at Annie, because he, like, thinks he hears something, turns around, and Annie, like, crawls through the air away through the room, and so he doesn't actually see her.
Yes. And then he goes downstairs and finds Steve's body.
Yeah, well, as he's walking out in the living room, the camera kind of pans around again, and we see that Annie is stuck to the roof now, staring in down at him. And he walks up to Steve's body, and he starts freaking out, obviously, because his dad's dead. And he turns around, and there is a naked man standing in the dark hallway, smiling at him.
And then his mom jumps out of a corner.
Jumps out of the corner screaming at him and starts chasing him. And a chase ensues, and they run upstairs, and Peter ends up climbing up the attic steps, which are down for some reason, up into the attic, and he pulls it up and closes the door, and there starts being a banging on the door. And he says, Mom, stop! Please, please stop!
Yeah, and it's, the camera pans down, and she's, like, stuck to the ceiling, banging her head against the door.
Banging her head against the door really fast and really violently. But then the banging stops, and Peter kind of stands up.
Yeah, Steve is very dead.
Yeah, Steve's dead.
Steve has no further role in this film.
Rip Steve. But Peter turns around and sees the kind of outline of where his grandma's body was.
Yes.
And he notices that in the outline there is a picture of him with his eyes gouged out again.
Yes, and then he starts hearing a noise.
And we also see, like, in the background, you can just barely see it if you're paying attention, but the attic is filled with naked people,
yes,
kind of hiding, and you can just barely see them if you're paying attention, but as he kind of he starts hearing a noise,
and it's Annie floating in midair, cutting her head off.
Her head off with a piece of wire.
It's slowly. Not
right. Yeah, she kind of like starts slow and then just starts speeding up until she's rapidly sawing through her neck, floating in the air there, bleeding everywhere.
But you don't see her head fall off because Peter jumps out a window.
Well, he jumps out the window because the naked people come out from hiding and start smiling at him. And then that all of this is enough to cause him to freak out, and he jumps out the window, landing in the garden two stories below.
He's kind of lying there.
Dead.
And then, well, he's not dead.
He's dead.
Oh,
he dies. That kills him. Full kills him.
Oh.
So he's lying in the garden dead, and we get a aerial shot of the weird light move up his back onto, like, his middle of his back, and then kind of absorb into him. And he slowly starts to stand up, and we get this weird kind of classical music starts to play.
Yes, and then he watches Annie's headless corpse float up the treehouse stairs.
And there's lights on in the treehouse, and so he starts making his way to the treehouse. He starts climbing up it.
Mm-hmm.
Possessed Peter, I guess. Yeah.
Was Peter?
Yeah, formerly Peter. But he climbs
the
up...
The corpse of Peter?
Yeah,
Whatever other euphemism we want to use for no longer Peter. The thing that once was Peter, but is no longer.
Yes.
And the treehouse is full of candles. And naked people.
Full of candles and kind of naked people. They're all dressed. Some of them are naked, some of them are in robes.
They're all naked except Joan.
Some of them are wearing robes.
No, she's the only one wearing a robe.
We're going to go back. I guarantee some of them are wearing robes. Anyway, it doesn't matter. They're all kind of bowing down in front of the shrine. And it's this big statue that has Charlie's head mounted on it with a crown, and the headless corpses of his grandma, who is very much decomposed, and his mom bowing before that shrine.
Yes.
And Peter's kind of looking around, kind of bewildered, and Joan stands up and starts telling him not to worry and calls him Charlie.
And takes the crown off of Charlie's head and puts it on his head.
Yeah, she goes, "It's okay, Charlie, it's okay. You are Paimon, one of the lords of hell, blah, blah, blah. Please give us gold and riches and good familiars and bend men to our will, how we have given our will to you." And he kind of turns around as the entire cult starts shouting, "Hail Paimon! Hail Paimon!" And then it zooms out and we see that they're in a diorama of the treehouse, all bowed down towards him, as we just get one final hail.
And then the movie ends.
And
like, that whole last wild bit is like 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's 10 minutes from when Peter wakes up. The movie
It's not long though.
No, it doesn't take very, very long for things to escalate. It escalates very fast.
Yeah, it's a very slow burn, and then the movie is real whack, and then it's done.
Yeah. Exactly.
So
that is that's Hereditary. Came out in 2018. Good movie. Go watch it. But now's the part where we're going to be rating it.
Yes.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, Victoria, how well do you think this movie was made?
I'd give it like an 8.
Yeah?
8.5. They have a really good job with like color theory and what?
Nah, I just think you bring up color theory every single busy video.
No, I don't. I definitely didn't mention color theory in Tammy and the T-Rex because there was no color theory.
Okay, all right.
It's an actual film tool if they use it, you know? I want to find out what's good. Yeah. I found sometimes, like, the muddied washing out of the color, like, as good as that was for, like, this is a bad place, sometimes made it kind of hard to see detail, or made the whole thing feel kind of muted. But, like, on the whole, I think it was really well made. So, 8.5.
I gotta give it a 9. It's the cinematography is brilliant. The fact that it makes us feel like we're looking in at a diorama for a great many of the scenes. And that just fits in so well with the theme of helplessness and, like, they're nothing but pawns in the game of this cult, and they really had no control over their own lives at all, at any point, really. And you kind of, with Annie talking about how she was forced to have this baby, you get the sense that really her life has not been her own. None of their lives has. They've all been manipulated by this cult to this final end. And I think that the movie does a really great job of showing and not telling.
Yeah.
The movie does a brilliant job of show, not tell. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's ever really any kind of exposition dump. You totally come to all these conclusions pretty much on your own, just watching the characters interact and discover on their own,
mm-hmm.
Which is really, really refreshing that the movie doesn't infantilize you or feel the need to hold your hand. It's like, you're an adult, figure it out. So yeah, I gotta give it a 9. It's a well-made movie. Fair enough. Scale of 1 to 10, how much did you enjoy this movie?
Like a 4.
Wow.
I don't know, it was really good, but like, it was a really slow burn, and then like, it was like a really startling ending, but then it was just kind of like, oh, and it's done now, alright. And I don't know, Gerald's Game scared me a lot, right, when we watched Gerald's Game.
Yeah.
I think it's the only movie I've given a 10 on this podcast.
Yeah.
But I actually liked Gerald's Game a lot, and I found it really interesting. I found it a lot, like, I found the acting really good, and I found the characters interesting, but I found it really difficult to, like, cheer for any of the characters, or to, like, be invested more than just, like, Amy needs therapy and Peter's having a bad time.
I don't think that's supposed to be, that's not the type of movie, you're not supposed to be cheering for anybody.
You're supposed to be
feeling bad for everyone, and watching things just get worse and worse and worse. And...
which, like, I did, but, like... I don't know. My enjoyment of a movie is not the same as if I thought it was a good movie. I thought it was a good movie, but I didn't necessarily, like, enjoy watching it, if that makes sense. So I'm going to stick with 4.
Okay. I got to give this one an 8. When I first saw it, it was refreshing, because I was fresh off of, like, just a tidal wave of kind of mediocre crap from horror movies. So it was really, really nice to see my expectations be kind of kicked in the nuts. So yeah, I gotta give it an 8. I like this movie. I've seen it 4 times now, and I think I've liked it just as much every time. The acting is amazing. Everybody does such a good job. Set design is great, and the ending is shocking and good.
That's fair. And, like, don't get me wrong, I do think it's a really well-made movie. I think it was a good movie. I don't think it was bad. It's just, like, I didn't really derive enjoyment.
Right, I'm saying I am, and part of my enjoyment is because it is such a well-made movie.
Totally fair.
Okay, now on a scale of 1 to 10, how scary was it? How spooky? How spooked were you?
Like a 5? Except for the part with the ants.
You needed a kitten at the end.
Well,
you grabbed our kitten.
I didn't. You actually grabbed our kitten and put her on me, which I...
All right, liked. Well, thanks for clarifying that, but you required the assistance of a fuzzy animal.
Yeah, and, like, the last bit was, like... ooh, but, like, I wasn't really, like, viscerally scared at any point. I think the part with the ants creeped me out a lot.
Apparently.
I have a thing with ants, bugs, and heads. Anyways. And I thought her, like, cutting her head off with wire, like, that was very distressing to me. I did not like that. But, like, the whole movie, I think, because it was a slow burn, it gave me time to, like, kind of... be prepared for when it ramped up. So, like, I still found it scary, but not, like, I wasn't white-knuckled cutting, you know, my tongue with my teeth kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
I'd give it a 5 as well, just because that ending is explosive, and...
for sure, and almost all of my, like, 5 comes
movie,
from the end.
And the entire movie is just building up tension to that moment as things are getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, and then bang.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I thought that it did a great job of that, and there's a lot of tense moments in the movie.
Yeah, there definitely are.
And a lot of creepy people in the background, if you pay attention. There's a lot of really creepy people in the background smiling.
Yes.
So that, if you watch it, like, multiple times, you start to notice them all throughout the movie, and you're like, ugh. But, yeah, 5 for me. Creepy.
Yeah.
That's
a good word for it. Like, I wasn't scared, but I was definitely creeped out a number of times during the film.
Mm-hmm. So anyways, that was Hereditary, which was a lot of fun. I enjoyed watching it. I hope you guys enjoyed watching it as well. Next time, I think we're going to be looking at covering Dead Silence. So look forward to that. In the meantime, I am Thomas J. Sotvedt.
And I'm Vicky Sotvedt, and we have great timing because my laptop just died.
Perfect. have a good night, everybody out there. Thank you, and be cool to each other.